Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez on this Friday, September 24th, 2021. Let's talk to former Royals catcher Mike McFarland now. Matt, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right. All kinds of fun stuff. College football, NFL, winding down the playoff chases. A lot of fun to be a sports fan right now.
How great was that video call that they set up between Johnny Bench and Salvador Perez?
Jealous as hell. I've met Johnny a couple times, and it's just the nicest individual, and just very, you know, appreciative of. You don't get starstruck or, you know, goo-goo eyes too often, but I mean, I used to have posters of this guy on my wall at home growing up, and got a chance to meet him. And then, you know, like I said, MLB's actually done a pretty damn good job this year of selling its product. And having that thing set up with the Royals, talking to Johnny Bench, and just as genuine and a man as you could imagine, pretty damn cool. Yeah, I was jealous.
Mike McFarland's our guest. Mac, before we get into the Royals, I wanted to ask you about something that happened, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, between the Rays and the Jays. And we talked to Buster only about this yesterday. So Kevin Kiermaier, center fielder for Tampa, during a game against the Jays, he picked up a scouting card off the field that fell out of Blue Jays catcher Alejandro Kirk's wristband, and he kept it and didn't give it back. And so then the Blue Jays manager, Charlie Montoyo, said, hey, it's fine, it's water under the bridge, we're not going to worry about it. And just apparently there was some communication, and the Rays were not interested in giving that scouting card back. And so even though the Jays manager said there was no problem in that next game, they hit Kevin Kiermaier, which led to not a full, you know, benches clearing brawl, but led to the benches clearing, and they had some words. And so, you tell me, you're a catcher. If that happened to you, was Kiermaier with do you have any problem with him picking up that scouting card and keeping it, and the Rays not giving it back? Should the Jays have retaliated by hitting him? Where do you stand on all this?
Today's game with the analytics and everything, and hot zones and cold zones. Sorry, as a catcher, I was supposed to know that inside and out already. And that's called going over the scouting report, doing your homework, you know, not having a cheat sheet like you can, you know, take into an AP chem test or something. So, all right, if it falls out, I might take a glance and just look at it, but I'd probably hand it back. But again, I get back to the fact that, you know, do your homework. Put your work in, and then you don't have to worry about that stuff. Know which sign, what the count is. You're the one that has to change the signs when there's a runner at second base. You should know that. You know, everything's just gotten so hypersensitive with all of these analytics. It still boils down to your damn pitcher executing a pitch to get the guy out. So the fact that, you know, there's manager speak, and then there's locker room speak, media speak and locker room speak. So in the media, we're fine, no big deal, blah, blah, blah. Locker room speak, he's saying, this is a bunch of crap. We're in a pennant race. We're fighting for our lives here. He needs to wear one when we have the opportunity. So I guarantee you that's what happened. All in all, probably just give the dang thing back, you know, because it's still, you know how they're going to pitch you. Go out and execute the pitch, or, you know, for that fact, go out and know how they're pitching you, and when he makes a mistake, you hammer it.
See, today's world, this all is so easy. To me, Mac, you sneak it back to the dugout, you take out a cell phone, you take a picture of it, and then you take it right back. Oh, hey, here you go.
Right, that's right.
Sneaky dog, you know, that's right, yeah. I did appreciate the part where he kind of like, it's like, hey, here's $5, get me into this bar, you know, kind of flagging him that the other coach the card and saying, do something with this. This is their key. But, yeah, I thought that was the best part of the whole thing.
Did you have to keep any, like, actual written down cards or scouting reports or anything like that on your person when you were out on the field?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and Bob Boone kind of got me going on that as well. Just some keys, especially early on, in the season, knowing your pitcher's tendencies and things along those lines. But you had a written scouting report that you bring with you. You'd never put it in your travel bag because then, the opposing team, when you unload it, on the road, would take, have a chance to take a look at it. Now, they probably never did. But I would keep a dialogue. I would always look a log. I'd look 3 days in advance to see how the hitters were swinging, try and match up which pitcher was throwing on that day and say, okay, that's kind of close to what H's doing and blah, 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 or Gooby, power sinker, and try and match those things up and get a game plan going along with the advanced scout that would be in the stand. So, that's the way it used to be, but I would keep individual notes and kind of simplify it and break it down and go over it with the pitcher night in and night out. They still do that part of it, but when you got to look at the wristband and things like that, it still boils down to the human element of the game. Can you execute the pitch where that blue zone is that shows that he's weak? And as a hitter, can you stay on that pitch that has been giving you a lot of trouble? And that's part of the battle. I work on it as a hitter to cover and protect that zone. And as a pitcher, I work on my mechanics to make sure I can hit that zone to get the batter out. That's what it still boils down to, but I don't know. It's awfully difficult. I just think it's pretty funny when you see the pitcher taking his hat off and how does, it's got to be uncomfortable wearing that card in your head, isn't it?
Mike McFarland is our guest. Mac, the Royals play at Detroit tonight. Carlos Hernandez on the mound against Casey Mize. No more off days. 10 days, 10 games, and 10 games for Salvador Perez to make more history. He already surpassed Johnny Bench's record. Now he has a chance to lead the league in home runs. He's 2 behind Jorge Soler for the Royals record. And, of course, if he gets red hot again, as he has several times this season, he could make a push at 50. 10 games left. He has 46. How many home runs does Salvi end up with?
You forgot about the stress that Jake's going to have on him for the over-under.
Right.
Right.
Let me tell you something. For a team that only has 69 wins, there's Jake is a nervous Nelly for these final 10 games, like you said.
Oh, they I'm into it. Go. I'm into it just for, to watch.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see Jake sweat this thing
he's
out.
He's watching for Jake to crash and burn. So for people that don't know, Jake made a substantial investment in the over before the season started. The number is 73.5. And so all he needs these running Royals to do is to go 5-5 in the final 10. So not only Salvi's chase at history, we have Jake's chase after
that
money
glory.
He's lost in other in other games, his chase at glory. And so you give me predictions on both. How many home runs does Salvi end up with? And then does Jake count his money a week from Sunday?
I like Jake's chances. I really do. Especially when you have young, hungry pitchers on the mound trying to further establish themselves going forward in the next year. Ben Attendi and now Hunter Dozier is kind of finding himself a little bit. So, yes, Jake, I think it's a 6-4 W for you. Salvi, everyone's saying just love to see him. 50 is just such a huge number in the minds of all baseball fans. And, doing what he's done already, he still looks strong. He's going to get every at-bat. So used to be when you get rained out like they did the other day, they'd say, well, that game doesn't mean crap, so we're just going to bang it. So I'm so glad that they're making that up on Monday. But, I'd love to see him get to 50 and just be there. And hope to God that the media splits their votes between Ohtani and and Guerrero and Salvi sneaks in there and gets a crap load of MVP picks. He's definitely in the top three. Would love to just see him finish strong, and nothing better than getting ahead of Ohtani when it comes to home runs and staying there.
So we had Buster on this week, and he said he thought that the home run chase for Salvi will actually help keep some of the other players engaged as well, because they love Salvi and they'll be rooting for him. And I'm curious, you've had to play out the string, you know, sometimes in your major league career when maybe guys are starting to the mind starts to wander a little bit towards off season plans and things like that. Is that true? Like, will Salvi's chase at history help keep the other guys engaged a little bit this last 10 days?
It'll keep the other players engaged. Name one person around the game of baseball that does not like Salvador Perez.
Right.
There's a lot of guys pulling for him, a lot. And what it does with your team around you, it's similar to when George was going for his 3,000th, and we were on the struggle bus as well. But everybody's game gets picked up when you're around something special like that. So, yes, I guarantee you, between the pitchers trying to go out and deal the last couple starts that they have to the batters just grinding out their at-bats to, you know, give Salvi, especially for the RBI situations that he can be in, give him every opportunity. You do that for your teammates and especially someone as loved as Salvi. And you know, between me, you, and the fence post, I guarantee you a lot of players that are the players are pulling for Salvador over Guerrero and Ohtani.
And don't you think it helps that they're playing Detroit, Cleveland, and Minnesota? They're not playing a team that has to win. That and look, everyone is out there competing, but they're not you know, playing one of the teams that's in the battle for a wild card spot. So it's not like they, you know, if I see anyone pitch around Salvi or intentionally walk him, I will lose my mind in the next 10 days.
That's a good point there,
right?
As well. Yeah, exactly. The only thing, Detroit has been playing good baseball lately.
Yeah.
They've been playing very well, and they're kind of coming together. And I know AJ has talked about keeping them grinding through this time of the season, and very similar to the Royals, having a winning second half, things like that. I can definitely see Minnesota rolling over in Cleveland, just, you know, watching some of their games right now. If a team gets up on them, they tend to fold. So, between Minnesota and Cleveland, there's a real good chance that, you know, the Royals can finish strong here in these last 10 games. But especially, again, I guarantee you they're going to be fighting Nicky and Witt, those guys trying to get on for Salvi to give them opportunities. You're going to see those guys stealing bases, still playing hard, trying to get into RBI situations, and let Salvi do his thing.
Mac, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for the time.
See you, boys.
That's Mike McFarland back after this on WHB.